Club Cheats, a podcast for book clubbers who just can't seem to find the time to read. I'm your host, Libby Turner-Rahman, and today we'll be talking about Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. Motherhood is complicated. It's touching, scary, funny, frustrating, sleep-deprived, guilt-ridden, a labor of love, full of selflessness, and quite often a wonderful thing. Some parents are convinced they are fantastic mothers, others aren't so sure. As a mother myself, regardless of where in the parenthood spectrum you fall, it changes most of us. Kevin Wilson's Nothing to See Here is a laugh-out-loud and insightful exploration of parenthood and friendship. Boy, did I laugh through this book, and it's hard to make me laugh. Nothing to See Here is written in first-person narrative. Lillian Breaker is our narrator, and what a refreshing, honest, dark-humoured and wonderful voice she has. It's 1995, and Lillian is working two checkout jobs for competing grocery outlets, smoking weed and living in her mother's attic in a smallish town somewhere in Tennessee. So, a pre-dead-end life so far, according to Lillian. She gets a letter from her friend Madison, who writes 4 to 5 times a year, and who she hasn't seen since boarding school. Madison is rich, married to a senator, Jasper Roberts, and offers her a mysterious summer job. Fatherless, Lillian grew up just poor enough with a mother that cycled through boyfriends the way most people go through paper towels. Lillian's mother tolerates her, but is not engaged with her. She doesn't understand Lillian, and doesn't want to understand her. Lillian is just too different. Lillian feels unloved, uncared for, and invisible. But she is whip smart, and Lillian decides the only way out of her small Tennessee town is to get a scholarship to the exclusive girls' school, Iron Mountain, nearby. Rich people send their daughters to Iron Mountain to get them ready to marry rich men. Lillian meets Madison Billings, the most beautiful girl in the world, on her first day at the exclusive boarding school. They're roommates, and they connect. Madison's parents want her to marry a university president, any university president. She has other ideas. Popular Madison is a mover, a shaker, and a fixer, and is going places, but without the university president. Lillian gets rich girl Madison's weirdness, and Madison isn't freaked out by Lillian's poor girl weirdness, and shows Lillian kindness. Their dorm room serves as a sanctuary for both girls to be themselves. Lillian thrives academically and athletically at Iron Mountain and falls in love with Madison. Both girls share a passion for basketball. They become the dream team of the Iron Mountain basketball team. You know this life of perfection is too good to be true. Yep. Madison gets busted with cocaine and is about to be expelled. Page 12. Madison's father drove up the night before. Her mother was unable to come, so overwhelmed with disappointment, Mr. Billings told Madison over the phone. He wanted to take us out to dinner, a kind of farewell for Madison and me, although I thought this seemed weird. He picked us up in a brand new Jaguar. He was older than I expected, and he looked like Andy Griffith, with that winking way of acknowledging you. Hello, girls, he said, opening the door to the car. Madison just grunted and hopped in, but Mr. Billings took my hand and kissed it. Madison has told me so much about you, Miss Lillian, he said. Okay, I said. I was a little unsteady with adults. I thought maybe he wanted to sleep with me. We drove to a steakhouse, and there was a table reserved for us, though Mr. Billings said it was for four. And then I saw my mom. Dressed up for her, but not dressed up enough for this place, she looked at me with this kind of "What the fuck have you done?" look on her face, but then she quickly smiled at Mr. Billings, who introduced himself and then kissed her hand, which my mother seemed to be so jazzed about, clearly. "A drink, ma'am?" he asked my mom, who ordered a gin and tonic. He ordered a bourbon neat. It felt like we were instantly become a new family. I kept looking at Madison for some kind of clue as to whether she was freaked out too, but she wouldn't even look at me, just kept running her eyes up and down the menu. "I'm happy you two could join Madison and myself on this night," Mr. Billings said after we ordered. My mother had chosen a fillet that was listed at $25, but I got chicken fettuccine, which was the cheapest thing on the menu. As much as I try to remember, I have no idea what Madison and her dad ordered. "Thank you for inviting me," my mom said. She had lived a hard life, smoking too much, but she had been a cheerleader and a beauty queen in high school. She was still beautiful. I had to admit, a beauty that she had not passed on to me, and I could see how she might, in this setting, seduce Mr. Billings for a night. "I'm afraid the reason for our gathering is not so happy," he said, looking at Madison, who was now staring at the table cloth in front of her. "I'm afraid Madison has gotten herself into some trouble because she's headstrong. I have 5 children, but Madison is the youngest, and she is more trouble than the other 4 put together." 4 boys," Madison said, a little flash of anger. "Anyway, Madison has made a mistake, and she's going to be punished for it. Or that seems to be what awaits us tomorrow morning, and that is why I wanted to talk to you and Lillian here." "Dad," Madison began, but he froze her with a hard stare. "Did Lillian do something wrong?" my mom asked. She already had her 2nd gin and tonic. "No, my dear," Mr. Billings continued. "Lillian has been an exemplary woman while at Iron Mountain. I'm sure you're quite proud of her." "I am," my mother said, but it sounded like a question. "Well, here's the situation. I'm a businessman, and as such, I'm always looking at things from a different angle, seeing all the possibilities. Now my wife refused to come here. She thinks that Madison needs to accept her punishment and aspire to do better with what's left to her. But my wife, though I love her, hasn't fully considered the ramifications of Madison's expulsion. The effect it would have on her future is more than I can state." "Well, kids make mistakes," my mother said. "That's how they learn." Mr. Billings' smile slipped for the briefest of moments. Then he recovered. "That's right," he said. "They learn. They make mistakes, and then they learn never to do it again. But in Madison's case, it won't matter that she won't ever do it again. Her fate has been sealed. And so I come to you with an offer." And I knew. I fucking knew right then. I was so angry that I hadn't known it hours before. I looked at Madison, and of course she wouldn't look at me. I grabbed her arm under the table and squeezed the shit out of it, but she didn't even flinch. "What's the offer?" my mom said, slightly drunk, very interested. "I believe the headmistress would be more forgiving if the student were someone other than Madison," he said. "I think if, for instance, it were your daughter, a virtuous girl who has made so much of herself while dealing with such hardship, the headmistress would offer only a cursory punishment, at most a semester's suspension." "Why?" my mother asked, and I wanted to kick her in the face. I wanted to sober her up, but I knew it wouldn't matter. "It's complicated, ma'am," Mr. Billings said. "But I do believe this. I believe that if you and Lillian marched into that woman's office tomorrow morning and told her that the drugs were actually Lillian's, the punishment would be quite lenient." "That's a big maybe," my mother said. Maybe she wasn't as drunk as I thought. "Well, it is a risk, I admit that, which is why I would be willing to reimburse you for your troubles. In fact, I have a check made out to you, Mrs. Breaker, for $10,000. I believe that would help towards Miss Lillian's continuing education. I believe that's enough in that gift to cover some of your own expenses."
$10,000?
My mom repeated.
"That's correct."
"Mom," I said, just as Madison was saying "Dad," but they both shut us up. Right then, Madison looked at me. Her eyes were so blue, even in the dim light of the shitty steakhouse. It was such a strange feeling to hate someone and yet love them at the same time. I wondered if this was normal for adults. Mr. Billings and my mom kept talking. The food came, and Madison and I didn't eat a single bite of our dishes. I stopped listening to anything. Madison grabbed my hand under the table and held on to it right up until her father paid the bill and escorted us out of the restaurant, his check in my mom's purse. That night, after he dropped us off at our dorm and we'd signed ourselves back in, Madison asked if she could sleep in my bed with me, but I told her to fuck off. I brushed my teeth and then, while she sat in her bed and read Shakespeare for some paper she had to write, since she wasn't going to be expelled after all, I packed up my duffel bag. How in the world did it hold less than it had when I arrived? What was my life? I got into bed and shut off my light. A few minutes later, Madison turned off her light, and we both sat in the dark, not saying anything. I don't know how long it took, but she finally crept over to my side of the room and stood over me. She was my only friend. I scooted over, and she crawled into my bed. She wrapped her arms around me, and I could feel her chest press against my back. I'm sorry, she said. Madison was all I could manage. I'd wanted something, and I didn't get it. Or it was going to be harder to get it when I got another chance. You're my best friend, she said, but I couldn't say anything else. I lay there until I fell asleep, and when the dorm parent knocked on our door in the morning to say that my mother was outside waiting for me, I realized that, sometime in the night, Madison had gone back to her own bed. Carl, fixer, security guy, secretary, jack-of-all-trades for Madison's husband, arrives and takes Lillian to Tennessee and the Roberts estate. Carl and Lillian bicker and have a semi-adversarial relationship. Madison has a perfect life and is lovelier than ever. She went to Vanderbilt University, became a political campaign staffer, saved and married Jasper Roberts, a senator who had gotten himself into a bit of a trouble. Jasper had an affair with his biggest donor. Madison, being a fixer, made Jasper conciliatory and rescued his imperiled political career. Jasper showed his gratitude by marrying Madison. Timothy, their four-year-old son, who Madison routinely dresses in nautical outfits, completed the happy family. Things are not quite perfect, though. Jasper's in line to be Secretary of State, but he has a slight problem, which needs to be fixed or hidden. Jasper's ex-wife, Jane, died recently, leaving 10-year-old twins, Bessie and Ronald. The slight problem is that the twins spontaneously combust. Yep, you heard that right. They catch on fire. And were that little nugget to become public, then Jasper's Secretary of State dreams would go up in flames. Madison needs Lillian to look after, mind, hide the twins 24/7 for the summer on the estate. Lillian has no experience with children and has never really had much to do with them, so of course she takes the job. Well, what does she have to go back to? The room in the attic? Shoplifted frozen pizza? This job means being close to Madison. Lillian meets the household. Mary the cook, a very deadpan small Asian lady with maybe a British accent. Mary intimidates the household, but she has a good heart. Mary tells Lillian the twins were wild. Wild, sweet kids, who she didn't mind cleaning up after. You know Mary loved those kids. Timothy, Madison's son, is beautiful, just like Madison. But that beauty looks cartoonish and unnatural hanging on Timothy. He has a chest full of stuffed animals and is never without one in his arms. Lillian grows to feel sympathy for Timothy. Jasper is the consummate politician, smooth, polite, silver-haired, with blue eyes. Jasper is perfect. Everyone likes him, loves him, rich or poor, except Lillian. She dislikes him on sight. She can see that if you shifted things slightly, Jasper would appear evil. Carl and Lillian go to retrieve the twins from their grandparents. Jane's parents had been rich and political somebodies at one time, but lost their position and fortune after becoming involved in a Ponzi scheme. Carl and Lillian find the kids in the pool. Page 70. Hey guys, I said, kind of casual cool, the tone where you act like you already know somebody, so they'll be curious. Bessie and Roland, right? In agonizing slow motion, the two of them began to slip beneath the surface of the water. They didn't swim away, just sat there, holding their breath, while I stood over them, my arms hanging at my sides. I didn't feel anything like Mary Poppins, that bitch. I needed a prop, some magic umbrella that played music or something. I wasn't counting, but it felt like they were under there for a good minute or so before they both stood back up, as if they thought I'd left. Bessie and Roland, right? I asked, like maybe they just hadn't heard me. Who are you? Bessie asked. Can you take those masks off? I asked them. I want to see what you look like. We're ugly, Bessie said. I doubt that, I said, but it was probably true. Our eyes get red in this chlorine, Bessie said. Pop-Pop just dumps in these chemicals. He doesn't measure them or anything. Do you want to come out? I asked. I figured I had a few more minutes before Carl came back with their stuff and fucked everything up. As a kid, I had a lot of experience getting alley cats to trust me. I didn't do much with their trust, just gave them some scraps of food and light petting. It was all about getting them to come to me. I thought kids weren't much different from cats. We're not leaving this pool, Bessie said. She had on a black t-shirt and some swim trunks. Her haircut was severe, kind of like a bowl cut if you didn't have the bowl to make it uniform. She was sunburned, but not painfully. Her brother was crouched a little behind her, hiding from me. I figured if I could get Bessie on my side, Roland would come along. We have a pool at our place, I said, bigger than this one. Does it have a slide? Bessie asked, suddenly curious. Two slides, I lied. Do you have flippers? She asked, Roland nudging her. Pop-Pop says no flippers. I'll buy you flippers, I said. You want us to come with you? Bessie asked. Yeah, come see our place. It's a nice place. I think you'll like it. I like it, I said. Now I was kneeling at the edge of the pool. I put my fingers in the water and felt how warm it was. You're going to take care of us? Bessie asked me. With each question, she moved a little closer, leaving Roland out there by himself. If that's okay with you, I asked. It sounds okay, Bessie said, trying not to sound too excited. Two slides? Two of them, I said, smiling. Bessie took off her goggles, and Roland did the same. They had crazy green eyes, emerald and shiny. Even in the sun, I could see them. Without the goggles, I could figure out their faces. I was a little surprised by how round they were. I had expected fire children to be thin and lanky, the fire burning all the weight off them. But these kids still had baby fat. They looked like kids who hadn't been taken care of. A little wobbly and weird. But here came Bessie, right to the edge of the pool, wading over to me. Where are you going to take us? She asked. Somewhere great, I said. Is our dad going to be there? She asked. Sometimes, I said, wondering if that was the wrong thing to say. Help me out, she said, holding out her arms like a baby. I leaned forward to reach for her, and she slightly altered her posture. I watched her whole body turn electric and wild, and she grabbed my right arm by the wrist and pulled my entire hand into her mouth. She bit down so hard on my hand that I screamed with such a force that the sound just disappeared, the kind of pain where time stops. I looked at Bessie, my hand still wriggling in her mouth, and she looked like she was smiling. I fell into the pool, and Bessie held my head under the water, yanking my hair, scratching like crazy at my face. The alley cats from my youth had nothing on this wild, psychotic kid. I popped my head up and heard Bessie scream, "Run, Roland!" And I saw his form hop out of the water like he'd been shot from a cannon. He was running for the fence, but I was back under the water. Bessie's claws digging into the skin in the corner of my right eye, ripping at my cheek. I tried to grab her to get some purchase at her squirmy body slick from weeks in the pool, and she bit me again, and I felt her tooth cracked on my knuckle. I made it back to the surface, and I could see blood spinning in the water, riding the chlorine. "Shit, Roland, get out of here," she cried out, and I heard Carl screaming, "What the fuck is going on?" I had swallowed so much water, but I finally managed to get my arms around Bessie's waist, her legs kicking out in front of her while I held on from behind. She was scratching at my interlocked fingers, but I wasn't going to let go. "Bessie, for fuck's sake, I'm going to be your best friend," I said. And I sounded so puny and whiny and like a fucking jerk. I hated myself. And then suddenly I realized how hot Bessie was. Even in the water, the heat rising up and reddening her skin, turning it almost purple. There was so much steam coming off her. I panicked, I guess, and so I pulled her under the surface of the water. I counted to 15, then 30, felt the heat recede from her skin, hoping I hadn't killed her. I lifted her up, carrying her to the steps. She went a little limp in my arms, had given up. "Where's Roland?" she asked. "Did he get away?" I sat on the stairs, still holding her, and we looked over at Roland, who had tried to hop the fence and had gotten snagged by his swim trunks, his pale white butt showing while he hung upside down, Carl muttering bullshit as he tried to free the fabric from the fencing. "I'm not coming with you," Bessie shouted, and then she found some hidden strength inside her and pulled free of my arms and started to run for the house. I grabbed her ankle and she fell hard, skinning her knee. Her shirt started smoking, the fabric singeing along the neck, but it was soaking wet and couldn't really catch fire. I realized there were delicate waves of yellow flame moving up and down Bessie's little arms, and then, like a crack of lightning, she burst fully into flames, her body a kind of firework, the fire white and blue and red and all at once. It was beautiful, no lie, to watch a person burn. I heard Carl shout, and I turned to see Roland now on fire, though not as bright as his sister. Carl simply kicked him into the pool where he fell like a rock, extinguished. I saw Mr. Cunningham holding a giant fork out for safety. Mrs. Cunningham was still asleep. "You want to stay here?" I shouted back at Bessie. My hand was hurting so bad, the kind of pain where I didn't even want to look at it because I knew how fucking angry it would make me, how many times I would time travel to think about all the ways I could have kept my finger from being bitten off by some feral child. "You want to stay here with these old people who are boring and probably don't even know what things you like?" "No," she said. Her skin was turning back to a normal shade, the fire already flickering out. It seemed like their bodies could only sustain the fire for a brief moment. Her shirt was in tatters, almost ash. "Or do you want to come with me? Because I'm cool and I'll keep being cool and you'll like hanging out with me." I just kept on going, didn't even wait for her to respond. "You want to stay here with your shitty grandparents and never get fed and scratch bug bites beneath sheets that haven't been washed? You want that?" "No, I don't want that," Bessie said, not crying, but wheezing from anger. "Or do you want to come with me, and I'll take care of you and buy you all new clothes, and I'll feed you whatever you want and play games with you and watch movies with you and swim in the pool with you and rock you to bed and kiss you goodnight and sing you lullabies and then wake you up and let you watch cartoons?" "That," she said, her teeth chattering. "We want that." "Okay then," I said. "Then you have to trust me that I'm going to take care of you. It's going to be weird, okay? It's going to make you angry sometimes, but I'll take care of you. It's what I'm going to do." By this point, Carl had fished Roland out of the pool and was carrying him over to us. The boy was listening intently. "Are you our stepmother?" Roland asked. "No, Jesus Christ, no. I'm not your stepmother. I'm just..." "She's like a babysitter that never leaves," Carl suddenly said. "Never?" Bessie and Roland said at the same time, and I realized how this could go bad so quickly. "Never," I said, smiling. Bessie still had a little trail of my blood coming down her chin. "We catch on fire," Bessie told me. "I know," I said. "It's okay. We just go with you?" she asked, and I nodded, exhausted. Bessie looked at Roland, who simply nodded his assent. "We'll go with you," they both said at the same time. "I packed up your belongings," Carl told them. Roland shrugged. "We don't have that much stuff to bring," the boy informed us. He had stripes buzzed on the side of his hair, and I was shocked to realize that their hair was unsinged. I don't know why, with these demon children bursting into flames right in front of me, their bad haircuts remaining intact was the magic that fully amazed me. But that's how it works, I think. The big thing is so ridiculous that you absorb only the smaller miracles. Arriving at the Roberts estate, Bessie and Roland don't appear to remember their former home. Madison greets them with teddy bears, while Jasper comes out looking like a preacher about to say the Lord's Prayer before the start of the Daytona 500. Jasper tearfully tells the children he missed them. Bessie stops Roland going to Jasper, and Lillian sees that they knew it now. They knew this place, their life before their life. Jasper starts to cry, and the kids catch on fire. Everyone but Lillian freaks out. She takes off her dress and puts out the fire. Carl thinks Bessie and Roland need to be institutionalized. Lillian fights for the kids, tells Jasper that they need a chance. Madison persuades Jasper to let the children stay by whispering campaign slogans like family values, personal responsibility, a better future for our children. I despised Casper here. Tilted this way, I agreed with Lillian. He looked evil. Lillian, Bessie and Roland go live in the guest house, a mixture of Sesame Street and a mental health care facility, outfitted with sophisticated sprinklers and fire alarms. Lillian talks Carl into disconnecting all those sprinklers. Entering the funhouse, both children are static. Roland, with the boxes and boxes and boxes of cereal lined up, and Bessie, over the shelves of books. Apparently all they did with their mother was read, although at their grandparents' the only books they could find were on Nazis, Patton and Stalin. Fun reading. That night, as Bessie creates mountains of books to read and Roland's mouth is full of processed cereal, Lillian understands that, on page 93, this is how you did it. This is how you raised children. You built them a house that was impervious to danger, and you gave them every single thing they could ever want, no matter how impossible. You read to them at night. Why couldn't people figure this out? Seriously, people, why can't we figure this out? The twins don't want to sleep by themselves and end up sleeping with Lillian in her huge king-size bed. She does question the appropriateness of it all for just a minute, then flicks it to the side. The trio spends days in the pool just having fun. Lillian's aware that Madison and Timothy are spying on them. The fun of the pool quickly wears off, and Lillian loses Bessie and Roland, who hike to the main road to try to run away. When Lillian catches up to them, Bessie says everyone would be happy if they disappeared, but then she realized that they don't know where to run to since they don't have anyone. Lillian understands that up till now she had only thought of herself and not of them, and that the kids were wild like her. She knew what it was like not to be welcome and that they deserved better. Lillian tells Bessie and Roland and herself that they have her. Oh my gosh, I was really tearing up here. Bessie and Roland are super smart. They know how to read, but not how to do math. Jane didn't give math a high priority, apparently. Lillian sets up a whole schooling schedule, as only Lillian can. Yoga starts the day. It's a way to calm the children's emotion and control the fire, since it's apparent that the combustion happens when the children encounter strong emotion. Roland aces yoga. Basketball is next on the schedule. Basketball is the thing Lillian is honest to herself about, the only thing she feels she knows inherently. Bessie aces that class. She's determined to be good at it. Bessie slowly lets her guard down. She shows Lillian how she can start the fire purposely and can control it, and how they have embraced the fire. It keeps them safe, and it's unique to them. Bessie also tells Lillian about her mother. Page 130. Are you a good person? Bessie asked, which was such a strange question. The kind of question a kid asks because they haven't lived long enough to know how easy that question is to answer. I paused, giving it mock thought. Not really, I said. I'm not a bad person, but I could be a lot better. Sorry, but here I am, and here you guys are. You'll leave, though, Bessie said. Someday, I said, when you don't need me. I knew it, Bessie said. Not for a long time, I said. Was 3 months a long time to a kid? It was a long time to me. Bessie and Roland looked at each other. They were doing that twin thing when they talked without talking. I'll stay as long as you want me to. Okay? I finally said. I'll stay. They didn't seem to hear me. We just sat there, and I prayed that Carl would not come to the house right at this moment. How would I explain it? I'd have to knock him out with a lamp, drag him to his car, and make him think that he'd dreamed the whole thing. Our mom, Bessie said. I know, I said. I know I'm not your mom. Nobody will be good as your mom was. She killed herself, she said, because of us. I tried to remember if Madison had ever told me that their mother had killed herself. Why hadn't she told me? Did she know? Was it a secret? If I ever saw Madison again, I'd ask her. Not because of you guys, I said. Come on now, Bessie.
She said it was too hard. She said that things were going to change, that we'd have to start going to regular school, that she couldn't do it anymore. She said that our dad wanted us to be normal. She said that it would never happen. I'm sorry, Bessie, I said. Roland curled up and I put my arm around him. She took all these pills, she said. We watched her take all these pills and then she died. Oh my God, I said. I'm sorry. Bessie looked like she was entirely empty of emotions, like there was nothing inside her. She looked over at Roland, who nodded. She told us to take the pills too, she finally said. What? I said, though I understood perfectly fine. What else could you do but pretend you didn't know that that was possible in this world? She had these two little plates with pills on them for me and Roland, and she said to take them. And she said she had these huge glasses of orange juice, and she was crying and said that this would make us all feel better. But we didn't take them, Roland said. His voice was scratchy. I told Roland not to take them. We just put them in our pockets and pretended, and Mom didn't even notice. We drank all this orange juice, and it was so much that we had to pee. But then Mom made us go into the bedroom, and we all got into the bed, and she said we had to go to sleep, even though it was daytime. And Roland was on one side of her, and I was on the other, and I couldn't see him. Mom was between us, and I put my hand on Mom's chest, and I could feel her heartbeat, and it was fine. I'm sorry, Bessie, I said, because I wanted to have a little bit of time, a moment before I had to hear the rest, because I wasn't ready to hear it. And it took forever, and then Mom fell asleep, and I had my hand on her chest, and it took forever. It took so long, and I had to pee so bad, so I just peed in the bed. And I peed in the bed too, Roland offered. And then she was really asleep, and I told Roland that we needed to get up. So we got up, and Mom was still asleep, and I knew that she was dead, because I felt her heartbeat. And then we changed our clothes, because they were wet. I made us peanut butter and crackers, and we ate them. We took all the pills out of our pockets and we flushed them down the toilet, and then we went outside. We went into the front yard and then we both caught on fire. It was a really big, the fire. It was more fire than we'd ever made, our whole bodies. And the grass around us caught on fire. And then a tree caught on fire next to us. And somebody, people who lived like a mile away, saw the smoke. And they called 911, and that's how they found us. That's how they found Mom. And she was quiet, and Roland was quiet. We were all breathing in and out, deep breaths. Our hearts were so steady, so strong. If there was a button that would end the world, and that button was right in front of me, I would have smashed it so hard at that moment. I often thought about a huge button like that, and that when I did, I always knew that I'd push it. That's awful, I said. And that wasn't your fault. Your mom was going through something, and she didn't mean to hurt you guys. She just couldn't think clearly. Sometimes I think we ought to have just taken those pills, Bessie said. And I was about to cry, but these kids who had been so fucked over by life were not crying. And it felt like such a wimpy thing to do if they were holding it together. Then I wouldn't have met you, I said. That would suck for me, and I'd be so angry. You'd be pissed off, Roland offered. So pissed off, I said. You guys are so cool, and I'd be sitting at home all by myself, no friends, and I'd never know you guys had ever existed. You'd be so fucking pissed off, Bessie said, and it seemed to sound exactly right to her. So fucking pissed off, I agreed.
Timothy and Madison come over for a visit as they are playing basketball. Bessie urges Lillian to play Madison. Lillian doesn't want to lose in front of the kids, but she plays. Just as it seems like Lillian's winning, Madison accidentally hits Lillian in the face with her elbow. It's an accident, Lillian tells the kids, but then she remembers how Madison would get dirty with her elbows to win at Iron Mountain. Lillian regrets Bessie and Roland's embarrassment at her loss. She also starts to understand herself and her relationship with Madison a little better, exploring the bitter resentments, intense rivalry, love, and complicated nature of their friendship. Lillian has major self-esteem issues. She's scared Madison will discover what she is and what she's not. Fundamentally, Madison took Lillian's self-worth from her when she let her dad buy Lillian's mom off. It's apparent Madison isn't worried how the children are really doing, but is worried about how their spontaneous combustion problem will impact Jasper's career and thus Madison's access to all the things that she wants. Carl and Lillian take the children to get checked out by Jasper's old family physician, Dr. Cannon, who's a revered physician, and everybody that's anybody in Tennessee has been his patient. Oh my God, it's the most crazy physician visit ever. He starts reasonably enough, but then it descends into the twilight zone. The Roberts family, according to him, have always been incredibly healthy. No illnesses ever have marred them. He thinks the children's combust is mainly due to ketosis, a metabolic condition, and suggests an anti-keto diet. And then suggests that Bessie and Roland may either have the Holy Spirit in them, or that God has chosen them to be a prophets, or that they could be envoys of the second coming of Jesus, or that maybe Satan resides in them and that they actually could be demons. Needless to say, Carl quickly hustles those kids out of Dr. Cannon's office and tries to smooth things over, but bribing the kids with double sundaes. Crazy. Researching famous Tennesseans for Lillian's history class, Bessie chooses Dolly Parton, who according to Lillian is the best thing to come out of Tennessee, what with Dollywood, Islands in the Stream, and that body. Carl and Lillian take the kids out to the library. The kids are covered in anti-inflammatory goo that stuntmen put on so they don't catch on fire. Lillian makes straight and narrow Carl put the Dolly Parton book down his pants to steal it, since none of them have a library card. At a family dinner up at the big house, Jasper puts Bessie down for choosing Dolly Parton. For God's sake, she's a lowly singer. Jasper gives the blessing for the meal. Madison, Timothy, and Jasper close their eyes, but not so our trio. Jasper's blessing just carries on and on and on. Roland gives up and calmly starts eating his chicken strips. Carl interrupts the family time, not too soon, with news that the Secretary of State dropped dead and Jasper needs to go to Washington. Madison comes to talk to Lillian that night and they end up on the basketball court. Page 200. What about the kids, I asked. Do you think they'll be okay with that? Timothy can handle anything, she said, not even really looking at me, her mind racing like 4 or 8 years into the future. The schools in D.C. are 100 times better than the ones here anyway. What about Roland and Bessie, I asked. Well, she said, I don't know about them. I just don't know. What don't you know, I asked. I don't know if they'll be able to handle the city. It's much more public, a lot more stressful. They're never going to see Jasper, are they, I said. Like, of course they wouldn't. And, like, how did I not already know this? Not much, she admitted. Who knows? Maybe that's for the best. Jasper's a better parent in theory. Like, if you look at his actions and his values from a distance, they'll still have access to what he can provide for them, Lillian. That's what really matters. So you'll be taking care of them, I asked. I won't even really be able to take care of Timothy, she said. This is a huge responsibility. So do you want me to stay with them? I asked, my heart beating, because I didn't know exactly what I wanted the answer to be. No, she said, so chipper, so happy. You've done so much for them. You've done so much for us. I wouldn't ask you to do that. Oh, okay, I replied. So then what? You get them like a real governess? Well, I haven't had much time to think about this. You understand? Like, there are huge things going on, but I think maybe boarding school would be good for them. They're 10 years old, I said. In Europe, Madison said, kids go to boarding school when they're 8. That might be really good for them to go abroad, to experience the world after being cooped up in that house with Jane all this time. I think that's a terrible idea, I countered, I mean, what happens if they catch on fire, right? Don't you think sending them away is going to make that worse? Honestly, it's better if they catch on fire in Europe than in DC, she replied. It's less visible, less verifiable. They've just been through a lot, I said. We went to Iron Mountain, she replied, and that wasn't so bad, was it? And before I could even reply, her face fell, and she stuttered. Well, I mean, it was a good school, right? You're going to ship them off somewhere, I said, and that fucking sucks, Madison. What else can we do, Madison replied. You can take care of them, I said. Okay, Lillian, she said, taking a deep breath. I appreciate the fact that you helped me when I needed it. But truthfully, you've just been watching them for, like, hardly any time at all. You think it's just so easy? But you don't have that kind of pressures that Jasper and I have. You can focus entirely on these kids because that's all you have to do. We have to plan our long-term future. This isn't right, I said. This is the thing about you sometimes, Lillian, Madison said, and I knew this was going to be soul-crushing. I knew it was going to hurt. You act like you're above it all, and you act like the whole world owes you something because you had it rough, and you judge people like crazy. Like, I know you have hate Jasper. I know you think he's not nice, but you haven't given him a chance. You just saw that he was rich, and that makes you feel weird. And so you think he's a bad guy. You never really tried anything. You had this bad thing happen. You got kicked out of school and you let that sit there forever like it was the worst thing that ever happened to anyone in the world. I honestly couldn't tell if Madison remembered the past at all. All those years that I wondered why she never once thanked me for taking the fall for her. I just assumed that it was because she was so embarrassed. But now it felt like maybe she just didn't remember it. Like her version of the past was that I'd gotten caught with some coke and gotten kicked out. And that she'd stayed friends with me because she was a good person. And that I'd fucked up because I was bound to fuck up. Your father paid my mom so that I would get kicked out of Iron Mountain instead of you, I said. Okay, she said, like she was humouring me. Like she would let me spin this conspiracy theory for as long as I needed to. And you let them. You let your dad do that because you didn't want to get kicked out. And because you thought it didn't matter if I got kicked out because I didn't really belong there. That's really unfair, she said. I was your friend. I cared about you. And you never thought about what I was going through, what I was dealing with. And, Lillian, even if you'd graduated from Iron Mountain, what would you have done? Do you think you'd have my life? Do you think that would be possible? I don't want your life, I told her. Your life seems so fucked up. It seems sad. She stood up suddenly, and I thought we were going to fight. I clenched my hands in my two fists, my face already so messed up that it didn't matter what else happened to it. But Madison just started jogging away from me. She started running. She ran to the basketball court, and she flicked on the lights. The whole court now illuminated. She started dribbling, running drills and hitting layups. She set up a free throw line and hit turnaround jumpers. And that sound, the ball bouncing on the court, the way the net swished, it just opened me up and made me feel like there wasn't a single emotion in my body. It made me not want to kill her. I was so grateful for that half-second reprieve from wanting someone to be dead, and I walked over to the court. For a while, I just watched her shoot, and she ignored me, as if I was in her head. Her game didn't show it. She was hitting almost everything so easily. You really are my best friend, she finally said, not looking at me. And yes, I know that's pathetic, because I haven't seen you since freshman year of high school, but you were, and for that little while, you were the best friend I ever had, and I just never met another person like you. But I was so embarrassed by what my dad did, or what I did, whatever, that I kind of thought of you as my friend, but frozen there in that dorm room. I wrote to you, and it made me happy to share my life with someone who fucking cared about me. And I liked hearing from you, knowing that you still thought about me. I wish I'd been a better friend to you. I wish I'd done the right thing and taken the blame. Honestly, I'd still be right here. Nothing was going to keep me from this. But okay, maybe your life would have been better. I was in love with you, I told her. I know you were, she admitted. She took a shot and it clanged off the rim, and that gave me this tiny measure of hope. It was so easy to be in love with you back then, and I liked it, because as long as I was in love with you, I didn't have to love anyone else, I said. And I've always kind of been in love with you, and I'm still kind of in love with you. She nodded, and then she looked over at me. She was so beautiful, and I remember those nights in our dorm when she looked at me and accepted my weirdness. She held on to me like nothing mattered. She was kind to me. And even if it had only been a few months, it was longer than anyone else had. I waited for her to say something, and she just stared at me, figuring me out. I didn't know what I thought would be there in her eyes. She just shrugged, like, what could she do about it? I knew she was sorry. It broke my heart, and I knew that a good part of my life had been spent waiting for it to break so I could get over it. I don't think she was going to say anything, but then she started speaking, not really at me, to the darkness, to the universe, which of course wouldn't be able to hear her. I know, Lil. I know. But what? What did you think I'd do with that? What kind of life could I have? Us? I think about it, okay? I think about you, but it can't be anything else. The minute it became something else, what would happen? We'd be so unhappy. I wouldn't, I said, staring right at her. I would not be unhappy. You have no idea, Madison said. Could you just say it? I asked her. If I had heard her admit it, if I heard the words in her own voice, I would remember them. I could replay them in my head. Maybe it would be enough. I can't, she admitted. Lillian, I can't. And that was it. What else could I do? Please don't send the kids away, I told her. Do you want them? Is that it? She asked. Do you think that would make you happy? I just want someone to take care of them, I said. Why does it have to be me, though? She asked. Why does it have to be Jasper? Because you're their parents, I told her, and I thought maybe this was a trick question. I hate my dad, she said. I was glad to get away from him. Your mom. Holy shit, Lillian. I knew that nothing I said would change anything. I want to stay with them through the end of the summer, she said. Here on the state, and then they'll go abroad, and Jasper will see them, okay? He'll see them on breaks and holidays. They'll have their trust funds. They'll be part of the family. I was crying so hard, but I didn't know when it had started. What had been the exact thing I couldn't say? I'm sorry, Lillian, Madison said. But I didn't know what she was sorry for. She took another shot, made it easily, and the ball bounced right back into her waiting arms. Okay, spoilers ahead. Jasper, Madison, Carl, and Timothy go to Washington for the confirmation hearing. During their absence, Mary lets our trio in to wander around the mansion. It's heartbreaking, because the children are trying to locate their former bedroom without speaking the words out loud. But Lillian knows. Their bedroom is now an exercise room. Their bunk beds, where Bessie slept on the top, long gone, as is their white toy box with flowers on it. Madison told Lillian that Bessie and Roland didn't start combusting until after the divorce, after Jane left, that the disease was Jane's fault, came from her side of the family. Dr. Cannon reinforces the healthiness of Jasper's line, but Mary tells Lillian that a couple of weeks before Jane and the children left 6 years ago, Bessie first combusted after Jasper violently told her off. Jane and the kids were gone soon after. Our trio watched Jasper's confirmation hearing and his speech on the steps of the Capitol on TV. In the background, as Jasper speaks, Timothy in Madison's arms spontaneously combusts. Oh my gosh. Madison drops him. Carl tries to put out the fire with his jacket. Jasper ignores the commotion behind him, stares ahead, and keeps on talking. The Secret Service bundle the whole family up and drives away. "Holy shit!" exclaim Bessie and Roland. In their glee, they catch on fire. It's a mad, huge fire. Lillian doesn't panic. She takes them outside and then lets them burn. Page 214. I looked across the lawn and Mary was standing on the back porch, watching the children, completely unaffected, as if she was watching some ordinary birds at a feeder. I waved to her, and she waited for a few seconds before she waved back. The kids ran in circles, the flames trailing off them and falling to the ground, where the grass caught fire for a second time before it smouldered. They burned and burned like they were eternal, but I knew that it would die down and it would fade away, back inside them, wherever it hid. I knew that soon they would turn back into the kids I knew so well, their weird bodies and ticks. I didn't try to catch them or put them out. I let them burn. I sat on the porch, a perfect day, and watched them burn. Because I knew that when it was over, when the fire disappeared, they would come right back to me. Madison, Jasper, Carl, and Timothy return from Washington. While Madison takes Timothy upstairs, Jasper tells Lillian she's not needed anymore. He's sending the kids to an institution in Europe. Jasper's also going to send Timothy to a health facility in some mountain somewhere. Coming down, Madison tells Jasper no way is he sending Timothy away. Jasper loses it and screams at the children that they ruined his life. Bessie screams back at him that he ruined theirs. And then Bessie and Ronald catch on fire. They whirl around the room, touching stuff and setting the house alight. Carl tells Lillian to take the kids, his Honda Civic, and run. Speeding away, Lillian sees the family watching the burning house. Madison turns round and waves. Lillian tells the children that they're going home. They end up at Lillian's mom's home and the room in the attic. Carl turns up and makes Lillian take a call from Madison. If Lillian wants the children, which she does, she can have them. Lillian will be their legal guardian, so Jasper will be responsible for their legal costs. Madison is going to stay with Jasper so she can have the freedom for her own ideas and life. Bessie and Roland will probably not see much of Jasper. Page 251. Okay, Madison, I said. I love you, Lillian, she finally told me. I love you too, I answered. But what else could be said? What else could be done? I'd better go, I told her. Bye, Lillian. Goodbye, I said, and I turned off the phone. And how do I say this? How do I say it and have you understand? Maybe there's no way to say it. I was happy. I was happy that Bessie and Roland would be mine. But can you understand me? I was sad. I was sad because I wasn't entirely sure I wanted them. They had appeared like magic, but I wasn't magical. I was messed up. I messed things up. And I knew that having two children who caught on fire, would be hard. It would make me sad. It would be so easy to ruin them. Something was ending. But even if it had been awful, my life was ending, and it felt like this wasn't my life anymore. It was somebody else's, and if I had decided that I'd just live inside it, see if anyone noticed, and maybe it would become mine, maybe I would love it. I'm just trying to say that I got something that I wished for, but I knew it wasn't a happy ending, no matter what Madison thought. No matter how much she convinced herself that everything would work out fine, it was an ending. And downstairs, there was a new beginning, and they were waiting for me. But I sat there in that attic, where I had never once been happy in my entire life. I sat there, and I held on to this moment before the new beginning started. I wondered how long I could stay in this moment. I wondered how many times in my life I'd come back to this room to this exact moment in time. I wondered what I would feel looking back on it. I got out of bed. I put on some shorts, a ratty t-shirt with a Dominique Wilkins caricature silk screened on it. The colours faded. I put on my basketball shoes, which I loved and had thought I might never see again. And under the bed, still there, was a basketball, the grip nearly worn off it. There was a shitty court a few blocks away, weeds and no lines, not even a net on the hoop. But I wanted them to try, to get used to a life that could be all ours. I loved this book. I loved getting to know Lillian. She was just such an interesting person, quite unlike anyone probably that I know. I left the dishes pile up and I let the kids eat whatever as I laughed and cried through this book. It's a fairly quick read, but it really touches you, and I cannot do it justice. You just have to read it. And I cannot believe that I have not read anything else by Kevin Wilson, but his book, The Family Fang, is on my next list of things to read. So please read this book. You'll love it. Here are some book club questions to consider. If you're a parent, what does parenthood mean to you? What is good parenting? And how did your parents' parenting style influence you? Why do you think Bessie and Roland respond to Lillian? Why and how was she able to connect with the children? What family values do you think each character holds? Are these values grounded in their socioeconomic background? What does the spontaneous combustion the children encounter, what does it mean in the story? What do you think about the fears that Lillian voices about her upcoming parenthood? Have you had those fears? Bye-bye.